Hi everyone, this is Wayne. Just a note before we start the podcast to announce the winner of our Leave a Comment contest. Thank you very much to everyone who left a comment on one of our episodes on DriveThruRPG, and a big congratulations to Theodric the Obscure for winning that $10 gift certificate. Stay tuned for more contests we'll run in the future, and thank you very much for your comments.
Welcome to Idle Red Hands, a podcast from Japan about gaming and gamer life.
And welcome to Idle Red Hands. I'm Chris.
I'm Wayne.
I'm La.
I'm Yujiro.
Now, I watched Leverage
Oh, nice.
Over the past week, just because we talked about it so much in the podcast.
What do you think?
Is it a great show? I don't know if it's great. It's entertaining. It's kind of fun. I've heard someone describe it as competence porn, and I can kind of see that, because like the guys just never fail, and really, really good at what they do, and sometimes you're like, it's almost like magic. You have to just suspend your disbelief a little bit. It's still kind of, it's fun to watch.
It's a really fun show. It's not deep at all. It's really formulaic. Random person with personal problems comes to these guys, and they help out.
And then there's some kind of twist that makes things difficult.
Yeah, exactly.
More difficult than they thought it would be.
It's fun. It keeps you guessing what is the twist going to be. But
yeah, that's true. I'm kind of like the guy who plays, Voodoo Tate from Friday Night Lights.
And the hacker.
Yeah. I don't disbelieve him as hard. Hardison as the hacker in Leverage.
Yeah, that's his name.
He is a little bit less geeky than you would kind of imagine, which I guess they're kind of breaking a stereotype there a little bit. But
sometimes when they do flashbacks, they'll try to show him kind of looking geeky.
Mm, I haven't seen that yet.
And kind of doesn't work. He might have a lollipop or something and a baseball hat on, strangely.
but it's like
Voodoo Tate with a baseball hat on.
Yeah. Kind of just like he just still kind of looks tough.
Yeah. And I think maybe he slouches a bit, and you're like, you still kind of look over 6 feet.
It almost be like, if he put on, those black-rimmed glasses with tape, he'd be like, you're kind of like a Superman now,
Or Clark Kent.
Yeah, Clark Kent. Like, we know you kind of look like a badass, and then, the glasses aren't fooling anybody. That's still okay.
Oh, and I got the Pathfinder beginner box.
Yeah, it looks pretty good. I haven't had a chance to, really, really look through it.
Like, speaking of looks, it looks gorgeous. The pictures are beautiful in it. It's really well laid out. It has nice, big, friendly type, good printing. I actually, looking at that, not knowing anything about the game, it really looks just gorgeous. I want to play it because of how good it looks. It's a sexy book. And I say that with full conviction.
Do you want to just play with it?
Yeah. I think what he's saying covertly is to leave the box here when you leave it alone. I guess since you bought it, Lyle, what's your impression as to it being a gateway RPG compared to the 4E Core 3 books?
Or even the Pathfinder Core book.
Yeah. Or even the Pathfinder Core book or other starter products.
Well, I was comparing it to something like Wrath of Ashardalon. And if you were to receive Wrath of Ashardalon, whether or not you wanted to play a role-playing game, I can see a kid going, this is cool. Look at all these miniatures. Look at the rule book, so small. Mm. Look at all these cards I get. This is awesome. If somebody said they wanted to play a role-playing game and had a vague idea what it was and got the beginner box, I could see them opening up like, oh, this is so cool. It's so easy.
Again, with the layout, it looks like they have these big colored and numbered circles, so it's really easy to set up your character and just go through. And for each of the different character classes, they have their own handbook. I think if I were a kid just paging through this and looking, every page has some kind of large, beautiful piece of artwork on it, I'd just be drooling over it.
Yeah.
I am.
It starts with a solo adventure.
Oh, that's pretty good.
So that's good.
Hmm. Yeah. That's what got me into D&D originally.
What, Choose Your Own Adventures?
It was a solo adventure in the back of the Red Book, I think.
Yeah.
Oh, but you actually bought the Red Book. Or you got it from someone.
Yeah. The guy in the alley.
And he didn't have to pay cash.
What did you have to do for that?
Where do you think my fetish for books started?
All right. I always want to eat a popsicle while I'm eating this.
Sorry. Tumbling down the rabbit hole.
I didn't realize the rabbit hole was this dirty.
Did you really not get the initial innuendo?
I did. I was just letting it slide, trying to not make
it. By bringing it up again?
All right.
Yeah, it's got a battle mat in it. Comes with its own dice. It's got a bunch of punch-outs. I think there's a punch-out for every class. You can get every race, mm-hmm. every core race, and a male and female for each one.
That's awesome.
Yep. And then you got a little adventure in there.
I forget, out of curiosity, how much was it?
It's actually goes for, I got it from Amazon, it's only about $23.
Wow, that's pretty good.
That is really good.
I was expecting to be 40 or 50, actually.
Right. So something like Wrath of Ashardalon goes for $50 on Amazon.
Yeah, I mean, as much as nostalgia as I have for D&D, that's, wow, I want that. That looks really cool. Like, if I were starting over in the role-playing again, I don't think I'd look at D&D twice with something like this.
Yeah, I haven't looked at the 4E box yet.
I suppose that said neither have I, but...
Yeah, I was really impressed, though, with Wrath of Ashardalon, how that looks. Because it's both it's mostly a board game, like Descent, but you play by yourself.
Mm-hmm.
You don't need a dungeon master. It's a cooperative game. So even when you have more people to play with, you're all playing against the game, against the board.
Yeah.
So as a gateway, that might be slightly better to get somebody who's unfamiliar with role-playing games to become interested in role-playing games. Mm-hmm. But once they have just a tiny bit of interest, certainly the Pathfinder beginner box does what it needs to do. Yeah, so very impressed.
Mm. Yeah. Definitely.
So for a game we've actually played, we just finished playing Marvel Heroic Role-Playing Basic Game.
What a title.
Yeah.
It is a bit long.
So as you can imagine, it's a role-playing game based on the Marvel Universe, and it's from Margaret Weiss Productions.
Mm-hmm.
And she also makes Leverage.
Yeah, she does.
Yeah.
It sounded interesting. The mechanics sound very similar.
Mm-hmm. You said they sounded similar to Marvel.
Yes, that's what I meant, sorry. Yeah. I mean, I think it almost uses essentially the same system.
That's what I've heard, that they use the same kind of system for most of the games, and they just buy licenses and modify it to fit that.
Yeah, I've heard that too, yeah.
So what is the system? So the system is...
That's a very rhetorical question.
Glad you asked that question to yourself. So what is the system, Lyle?
I don't need you setting me up, obviously. So the system is a dice pool system, and it uses dice from D4 to D12. And what you do is every time you want to do an action, you create a pool drawing from your powers, your affiliation, such as a solo, buddy, or team. Things called distinction, and I guess that would be like your personality.
Yeah.
Personality traits. Superpowers, as I said, your...
You got skills.
Skills.
You call them
specialties.
Yeah, so when you get into a situation, say you're going up against a supervillain, you'll go up to punch the guy, and you'll take, if you're working together with your teammates, or if you're working on your own, you'll choose a die based on that. Then you'll add in your distinctions, your personality. If anyone's familiar with Fate, it's very similar to Fate aspects. Mm-hmm. For example, I was playing the Human Torch, so one of his was hot-headed. So if I was going, crazy after somebody, I would add that distinction into it. Then choose your superpower, whatever you're using, add that die to your pool. Then if you have a specialty, for example, like combat specialty with punching, that would be added in. And then you roll everything for it.
And then the game master is called the Watcher. And people who know the Marvel Universe know where that comes from. And I guess for people that don't, I'm not going to tell you. It wouldn't make any sense. And they have a pool as well. And I suppose you could say that they have two pools to choose from.
Yeah.
What they have is like a kind of like a game or adventure pool called the Doom Pool. And let's say the Human Torch is fighting Dr. Doom, then the Watcher has Dr. Doom's pool as well. And they would use Dr. Doom's pool and possibly add stuff from this thing called
the Doom Pool, which is unrelated to Dr. Doom.
That's probably a bad example, eh?
How about Carnage? Use Carnage instead.
And people are going, then why isn't Spider-Man fighting him? All right, Mole Man.
Mole Man, yeah.
So you have Mole Man's pool, and then you can also draw from the Doom Pool.
Yeah.
And that's not related to Dr. Doom at all.
I thought the Doom Pool was, looking at it when I'm reading through the rule book, I thought it was kind of cool because it is kind of like an escalating sense of tension, right? Mm-hmm. So kind of whenever the player characters, whenever they kind of screw up or mechanically when they roll ones on any of their dice pool, the Watcher can buy those dice.
With things called plot points.
Right. So,
which are very similar to bennies or action points or things like that.
Yeah. Yeah, they're kind of reward. And then the Watcher will add those dice to his die pool or the Doom pool. Yep. So it's kind of like when the characters screw up, or not even screw up, it's just, they kind of fail a little bit, and so the stakes kind of ratchet up higher. So looking at it, I thought it looked like it would work pretty well.
Well, how the actual rolling of the pool goes is then you choose, regardless of how many die you roll, you choose three of those. Two are added together as basically your two-hit roll, and
right.
It's rolled against, so your opponent will also be rolling the same thing. And then you choose one die as your effect die, and that one will do how much damage you do, or there's other certain special effects based on your powers. If you're doing it against a kind of a situation, for example, you're trying to kick down a door, then the Watcher will roll the Doom Pool as kind of just the world's fighting against you
of
thing.
Now, I thought that was pretty cool, the dice mechanic, how, you chose two dice to total up to be your effect sort of total.
Mm-hmm.
As Chris said, like you're to hit roll. And then It was the type of die you chose to be your effect die. So like a D4 would have a pretty weak effect, and a D12 would have a very strong effect, and it didn't matter what number you actually rolled on the effect die, just the bigger the die, the better. So I thought that would be really interesting in that you would kind of have a lot of choices in that, okay, well, I can use this D10 for the 10 that I rolled to make sure I succeed on my attempt, or I could take a lower total and keep my D10 as the effect die to have a bigger effect, even though I have a slightly less, there's a slightly less of a chance of me succeeding. So.
Yeah, I thought it was pretty cool how you can play around with the different die and move them about to choose different effects, choose whether you hit better or whether you, you do more damage. And I also really liked how loose the system looked. You know, you can kind of use your powers in a different way, and there were stunts included, so if you could think of a really original way to use your powers, you might be able to get some extra die bonuses in there. It reminded me a lot of Fate,
yeah,
in that you could just really go to town and work, do really whatever you wanted to, and the system would kind of meld to fit what you wanted to do.
Even making your dice pool is, I guess, Fate-esque in the sense that it's all about whether or not you can justify it. And borrowing from the book, which I think makes a really good use of examples. So to give you an idea, if let's say this Human Torch, he rolls 4 dice. He would choose 2 of those dice to be kind of your attack value. And then you would just add them both together. And then if you rolled a 1 on one of those dice, then the Watcher can buy one of those for a plot point. So let's say the Watcher buys one of those. So now Human Torch only has the 3 dice. He's chosen 2 to be the attack value. So the 3rd one is the effect value. And I think this could be a little bit confusing for somebody, is that the effect is just the die type, whereas the kind of the attack or the action is actually a total of the 2 dice, or possibly 3 dice if you want to add that to the total.
Yeah, in Converse, 1s are bad for everyone around. If a player rolls a 1, then the Watcher can buy those for his Doom Pool. But if the Watcher rolls 1s against the players, they can also spend their plot points to buy those off of him and save them for additional pools in the future.
Reading through the book, it was very clear how the system worked because they had so many illustrations and pictures, and they would actually give an example of, okay, here's, you know, the Human Torch's die pool, and it would show you the dice in a big chunky picture, mm-hmm, and then it would say, and here's what he rolled, and it would show you the same dice with, you know, different faces showing, and then it suggested, okay, and he's chosen, or the player has chosen these 2 dice to be his to hit number, and it would highlight those 2 dice in blue, and then it said, and he's keeping this die as his effect die, and that die would be green, and this die rolled a 1, so the Watcher can buy that, and that die would be highlighted in a different color. So I think the book has very good visual examples of how the system works, and it's quite clear to kind of figure out how it works that way. And they also gave a good kind of, I guess, narrative examples of how things work as you're progressing through the book. And those were called out in a blue text and kind of, you know, indented from the rest of the text. And new concepts were also highlighted in a different color. So I think the book was organized pretty well in that.
And they even had in the margins page numbers. So if they make a reference to the Doom Pool but don't get into a lot of detail, there'll be in the margin the page number where you can find more information on it.
The Doom Pool. For more on the Doom Pool, see page whatever. So I think the book was laid out pretty well. And it is a really good looking book because there's lots of, it's all full color.
And they use Marvel.
Yeah, real comic pictures.
Yeah.
So. Yeah. And we like the dice coloring so much, we ended up spending a bunch of money to buy dice and found out we didn't have enough.
Yeah, we didn't have enough. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, you have a lot of dice for this game.
Yeah. So I had red for my effect dice. Mm. Black for my Doom Pool. Yellow is the communal, the characters.
Yeah,
and that's because yellow is what's on the, they call them data files, character sheets. So they use yellow to indicate what your dice is. So it's not like a D12. It actually looks like a picture of a D12.
Yeah, I did like that.
Yeah. So we use yellow. And then blue is the total, only because the first example had the dice you used to make the total in blue. Getting into the more about, I guess, the what the book looked like. It is a beautiful, beautiful book. And I think it really sells a comic book universe or a comic book game. It really made me feel like I was playing a Marvel game. And they also have things, the system has adventures called events. And the one that comes in the book is based on the New Avengers story Breakout. That's what it is. It's that breakout story. Which, I mean, is both good and bad. If you've read the story, you kind of know what's going to happen.
Even if you haven't read the story.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. It's called Breakout.
Scene starts in a prison. And what's one of the main goals in this? Oh, yeah, recapture the fugitives.
They call the... there's things called milestones, and those are your goals. And every superheroes each have two milestones. Plus, events or adventures can have 2 to 3 milestones. And the players have a choice of swapping their individual milestones for these event milestones. The problem is, as Yujiro pointed out, as I was reading out the adventure milestones, and one was like, get the sentry on board. The other was,
prevent the fugitive from escaping. Recapture the fugitives.
And then there was another one about shield, which was actually slightly more cryptic and doesn't give anything away. But the first two kind of, especially the second one, really gave away what this adventure was going to be. You know, you're in a prison. Well, I guess if you're saying you're in a prison.
I mean, like, yeah. I understand.
And everything goes great. You go in, you do what you got to do, you leave.
Breakout actually means when your character gets a pimple, you know?
Yeah. It is kind of, I don't know, like there's not really much of a distinction between a storytelling game and a role-playing game. Really, they're kind of very similar.
Have you played 4E?
Yeah, and I, that's a tactical miniatures war game. So anyway, the way the system kind of works, and maybe this is kind of jumping ahead, but the way you kind of have to form your dice pool and kind of negotiate with the watcher about what can go into your die pool, or there doesn't seem to be a chance for there to be many secret things happening, including objectives for an adventure.
I was wondering how you're going to link that.
It was going to link back. you know, because at the beginning of the event, yeah, the watcher says, okay, here are the milestones for the characters, and you can swap them out with your own if you want. So, yeah, like the players would kind of see what the goals of the adventure are already. So it's, I don't think you could ever do a mystery game this way.
That makes a lot of sense because we said before that it's very similar to a Fate type game. Same with that Dresden Files game. You make the adventures and the whole setting in the open with all of the players. You don't build it as a secret, probably because in this kind of game, it's difficult to do that.
Yeah, I think I was going to say it's a little bit kind of like Cosmic Patrol in that, well, in Cosmic Patrol, kind of nobody knows what the goal is, but you have that sort of mission briefing sheet where it says this will keep everybody on track. And here there's only like one GM, the Watcher, but I still kind of see it the same way. Like the goals of this story are on the table for everyone to get right from the beginning.
Sure. As we said when we were playing the game, the majority of people that are playing Marvel heroic role-playing are probably Marvel fans or superhero fans. And it looks like some of the future events, one is Civil War. Mm. So you're going to imagine, is it a reenactment of the American Civil War? Or is it superheroes fighting each other? And you're like, well, it's superheroes fighting each other.
In the Civil War.
But it seems that you kind of know what it's going to entail. Yeah, but, you know, you go to, if you play Tomb of Horrors and it's like, it's a tomb and it's horrible.
Yeah.
Tomb of Horrors. What do you think is going to happen in Call of Cthulhu, right?
Yeah, well, that's just a good one. But I guess, yeah, because also based on the fact that the hero data files, at least in the basic game so far, there aren't really hero creation guidelines. Mm-hmm. It's just, here are the data files for existing Marvel characters.
No, there are. It's in the book. We just, I said, as the Watcher, please choose
one. But they don't.
Because I just wanted to focus on the
actual. But what I'm saying is there are no mechanics that tell you how to balance these characters, or if there is even any balance, right? There's nothing that says you have X points to spend on specialties, you have X points to spend on powers, and here's what you should buy them at. It's more like a glossary of powers with levels of.
That's not like a point buy.
Yeah, I don't know how you would build a character other than to base it on other characters in the Marvel universe and say, okay, like for example, the Sentry, right? He was in there. Yeah, all his powers were at D10, but his I forget what it is, power of a million suns or something?
Yeah.
Like he has 6 powers in that power set. You can only use 1 die from a power set in each pool that you form, but he has 6, where I played as the Invisible Woman and she had 4, or maybe a bit more, and like I don't know how many the Human Torch had.
Human Torch had a bunch of powers. I think he had 5 powers, but he had very few specialties. Whereas
yeah.
Kitty Pryde, Yuji, who is still here actually,
yeah.
he had a ton of specialties and only, 2 powers was it?
Well, I had 4, but one of them was kind of taken away.
Two of them were taken away by your own choice.
How are they taken?
Because they are tied to Lockheed. Yeah.
Lockheed. Yeah.
But then you also look at like the special effects that are tied to each power, and some people have like a list that's like the entire page of special effects, while some people have none. So I think it will come out in the advanced quote unquote book on how to maybe build your own. own. But tying back to the kind of no secret thing, it's, as Lyle said, people who read comic books and have read these events and who kind of know the characters that are in them, maybe they'll want to play as the Invisible Woman, the Human Torch, Shadow Cat. Maybe they'll want to play as these people, and so they're included in them. But,
you know, comic book fans are going, I don't recall those three characters in Breakout.
Well, yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. I'm not saying they were in Breakout, but...
Who played Spider-Man? Who played Captain America?
Nobody. Which is maybe why we got our asses handed to us. But anyway, that being... The point I was going to make is I see the established characters in the established stories that are part of the event contributing to that you're telling the story again, or you're telling a slightly altered version of an existing story already. And people are free to disagree, but...
No, I mean, yeah, sure, I agree. I mean, that's what it is. And it has a powerful advantage in that it really helps them to capture the flavor of a comic book story because it's actually a comic book story. Yeah. The art is actually from the Breakout series.
Yeah, and then kudos to you, man. Like, you, yeah. Lyle actually had that book, the Breakout comic here, and he used it for to show us pictures of what was going on.
Anti-kudos for you for being such a hard ass.
Why?
Because we sucked so much.
No, because Human Torch.
Dude, you could have taken that.
You know, I did have some reservations. When you guys originally were decided to be like the Fantastic Three, because there's only three of you.
I found out later that Yujiro only chose Kitty Pryde because he thought I was choosing Emma Frost. And then when he showed up and I said, I'm the Invisible One, he's like, oh, really? Oh,
okay.
Sorry.
That's actually not the reason.
But, oh, really? I thought that's what you said when you first came in. All right.
I was expecting Emma Frost. Yeah.
He chose Kitty Pryde because I said I was thinking the Human Torch or the Thing.
And I figured... Chris would go the Thing. Chris is, he would be the Thing.
But. We probably could have used two heavy hitters.
Yeah. Chris got his yelling in as the Human Torch. It's all right.
I didn't yell at all.
Well, what you're saying, there are guidelines on how to build a character. I guess they're insufficient for some people here.
You could at least cover that with a cough, dude.
The affiliations are quite clear because it's either a D6, a D8, or a D10. And you decide whether or not to put your D10 into solo, buddy, or team. So that's quite easy. With distinctions, though, I'm not sure you need some heavy guidelines. Perhaps more examples of what you could for distinctions would be helpful. But I mean, they're personality traits. So hot-headed for the Human Torch seemed like it seems more negative, whereas the Invisible Woman had a distinction that was called Soul of the Team, which seemed very positive. And the idea with these distinctions is they could be played both positively or negatively. But the book itself says is some distinctions will lend itself to be more positive and some will lend themselves to be more negative. What they're trying to do is it's more important to capture the personality of the hero than to have something like absolutely balanced.
And I kind of wish I had known that before we played, because we found that out kind of, you know, after we finished the session. I guess I was using the Invisible Woman's distinctions as, well, basically, like, if you use it in a negative way, you roll a smaller die, a d4, and you get a plot point, which you kind of use plot points to power other effects.
And they're very important.
Yeah, they're very important, yeah. And I was trying to use what I now see as very positive distinctions in a negative way, specifically to get plot points so I could attempt to do better at my actions, and... Fair enough. I was getting told it doesn't work that way.
Can we say what you're trying to do?
Yeah, sure. Go ahead.
One of the distinctions the Invisible Woman has is compassionate. So Wayne, in order to try to get these plot points and to try to see or use compassionate
basically,
as a negative.
Basically to try and be effective and get freaking points.
Okay, whatever. I mean, you had your reasons. he saw it as... To be cold-blooded would be the negative of compassionate instead of being the opposite of compassionate. So as Carnage was slowly raping Kitty Pryde.
Again, it had to come up and Christos isn't even here. All right.
No, actually, he was just eating Kitty Pryde.
With his tongue.
That's generally how you eat someone. All right.
Yeah, I was just trying to say in a non-sexual way, like little eating, but then you didn't help there, Yujiro. Like, Carnage has that feeding ability.
Basically, there's no way you can spin that action so it's not a euphemism for sex.
Did I mention he was using his tentacles? No. All right. So Wayne was saying, well, the Invisible Woman is compassionate, so in order to use that negatively, I'll ignore what's happening to Kitty Pryde to do something to somebody else. And you're like, no, you wouldn't do that because that's not really the negative of compassion.
So I guess in that situation, I could have helped Shadowcat and used the distinction in a positive way and added a D8 to my pool.
And the book says that. And the Invisible Woman is in the Fantastic Four, where there's all these personality flaws, she's probably the most grounded person on that team, hence soul of the team. So she doesn't have the glaring flaws that the Human Torch has or the huge insecurities that the Thing has. So, yeah, she's not somebody that you can use the distinctions very easily as a negative.
Yeah.
Whereas the Human Torch, it was very hard for you to figure out ways to use some of his distinctions in a positive way.
Yeah.
I guess looking at that now, I understand how it's supposed to work. From a role-playing standpoint, right? Mm-hmm. These are kind of tools to kind of get you to act in a certain way. But
From a system standpoint, they say it balances out in that you are always getting D8s in your dice pool for using your distinctions positively, whereas the Human Torch is getting D4s in his dice pool, but getting plot points. So that's the balance.
That's supposedly how they balance, but using plot points, there are other things you can do when using plot points. Like, as the Invisible Woman, one of her kind of signature moves is to create these, like, force objects, force constructs. And I thought that sounded pretty cool, but they would only hang around past my next turn if I spent a plot point on them. And when I'm sitting there with no plot point saying, I want to make a wall to block people off, or I want to make an asset that's going to hang around, then those distinctions kind of bit me in the ass because I have no plot points. How can I spin these in a negative way to earn plot points to do something cool on my next turn? I can't.
Well, maybe you could have used Soul of the Team. Sorry, this may be perhaps getting too specific, but you could have used Soul of the Team in a negative way by exposing yourself to danger for the sake of a teammate.
That's a good one.
We should probably say that this is very much at the core of the game. It's all about what you can justify. Sure, some, like Energy Blast. Well, it's pretty obvious what Energy Blast is. So when you're going to fire Energy Blast...
I blast him with energy.
Yeah, I guess so. You just invert it. It's very easy to determine what die you're going to use when it comes to your powers.
Like, I like the pacing of the way the game seems it would be. I guess in the book, as we said, it is kind of a very free-form game, very sort of Fate-esque rather than D&D 4E. And there's no initiative.
There is. But again, it's more free-form. They say turn order can be... it's not fixed. Like, everybody rolls initiative, and then it's fixed for the remainder of the combat. It changes every turn.
Based on what the players want to do.
Yeah, so it could be the player could... Who's the natural leader? Maybe he or she is making the choices. It could be the fastest person. It could be the person who speaks first, and they actually say that. And that could be like a Human Torch being hot-headed and just going and doing something, and you imagine the other characters going, Johnny!
Yeah.
But it is very... There are clear rules of when the watcher can interrupt that, because normally the heroes will go first, then the watcher goes. But if the watcher wants to interrupt, they need to do certain things.
Right. But the way that they framed, which is a good word, the way they framed how long a player's action can take is they said, whatever would conceivably happen in a comic book panel, that's how much time you have to do your action, which I really liked reading the book. In practice, though, at least at the beginning, it took a long time to build the dice pool because you're negotiating with the watcher about, okay, in this situation, am I considered part of a team? Am I a buddy? Am I by myself as a solo?
I don't think there was much negotiation there.
Maybe as the one I tried to negotiate it the most. In that
really?
I don't... Well, trying to make those shield guys part of my team to use my team distinction.
And it was pretty quick. Negotiation. Yeah, I was like, oh, okay.
I don't think I ever had to worry. Like, there was the one time where I wanted to try and make a team, but, you know, your power failed, so we didn't have a chance to work together, so I just went with solo. That was the only time there was any slight hesitation.
Well, I guess at the beginning, we might actually be saying some things that are wrong. I mean, we're trying to say what we think the rules are, but we've just read the book and played it once. We really just wanted to... We were very, very excited when we read the book, and we really wanted to play a game and then do an episode on it, because this will probably upload shortly after the print edition comes out. PDF is available now. When we started the play, it certainly took a long time to get through all the actions because we kept having to double check the rules.
Yeah.
We're like, wow, that seems so clear in the book. And,
and then you were doing it and you're like, oh, that doesn't make any sense.
Sorry, what?
You know what's supposed to happen?
And of course, once you start playing a game, there's certain questions that you don't think to ask when you're reading the rule book, because you're like, hold on, what happens when I do this?
Mm.
Yeah, I know what happens when the players do it, but what happens when the watcher does it? So
I guess,
there were certainly those teething pains.
Yeah, I guess my point was, as the game went on, we got quicker in building our dice pools. But because the system is sort of so open and there is a lot of negotiation or descriptions as to how you are going to use certain powers and and distinctions and specialties. It didn't seem like actions took a comic book panel, right? Like, maybe the result took a comic book panel, but the process to get up to that point felt kind of long. And after we've played it more, you know, you'll just kind of be able to build things quickly, and I guess, like any game, things will go more smoothly, but I was kind of disappointed that the action didn't feel as quick or as comic booky as I thought it would be when reading the system.
Yeah, and I think that's going to be true of any kind of game that's like Fate, because you have to consider how you're going to use these powers and how you're going to adjust the power, or the different aspects to the rules, and how the rules are going to adjust what you've chosen to do. So I think it takes a lot more thing than a game like Eclipse Phase or 4E, where you say, I use this power and roll the dice.
Right.
But I think definitely with more experience, it would come more quickly. And that said, I don't think it took me more than 30 seconds to make my turn each time.
I mean, certainly they have things in the game that are designed to help the heroes play off each other, like the assets.
Yes, yes.
And the example they use in the rule book is Kitty Pryde cracks a security system and in Hellfire Club, and it compromises it. Perhaps it's D6. And that means the next time one of the other heroes tries to do something with the security system, they'll get a D6 in their dice pool, an extra D6. Right. Just for that. And yeah, with experience, that's going to be quite easy thinking of that. And that was certainly something that we had trouble with when we played Fate. We were having trouble using the surroundings in a mechanical way. And that's just something that you need to do in Marvel.
Again, with that, there was one situation where, as a Human Torch, I'd rammed into one of our opponents, and I wanted to...
Count Nefadia.
Count Nefadia. I wanted the Invisible Woman to throw up a force field as an asset, and then I would try to ram him into that. I wanted to try and do a team action like that. So that would have been an example of a way to do that.
You tried to do it, and then you failed the roll.
Yeah. Well, no.
Well, what happened is, first, I failed to throw up a force field because I rolled a bunch of ones, and then Chris, as a Human Torch, failed to hit Count Nefarious because he rolled a bunch of ones. And
so you double failed.
So we double failed.
I rolled really well with that. The Count just spanked me. I think that was one of my criticisms of the game, and I want to say any of the criticisms I have, I don't feel like I understood the game well enough to really have been into it, so this might actually be part of the game, but the Doom Pool grew the entire game, so whenever you try to do an action such as, like, break down a door, as I did, the Watcher rolls the entire Doom Pool against it. But each time a player rolls a 1, that has a chance of being added to the Doom Pool. So by the time we finished up, the Doom Pool was enormous.
Right.
So even something as simple as, like, kicking down maybe even a wooden door would have been harder. I mean, yeah. Of course, you know, the Watcher can say, you know, of course, it's just a regular door. I'm not going to roll the whole thing. But it seemed like difficulty increased more as the game went on.
Well, the idea is you're supposed to, as the Watcher, you're supposed to use the Doom dice a lot in rolling for your villains or other things.
But they didn't need it.
Yeah, so I was using it a lot. Actually, my Doom pool shrunk quite a bit. You usually start with about 2 or 3, and you can imagine that as like a difficulty level, like if you're playing a low-level adventure versus a higher-level adventure.
Man, imagine if the Doom Pools are like 2d12. We're going to be screwed right from the beginning.
Well, I think it's all d6 from the book. It might be 2d6 or 3d6.
Depending on the scale. I think if it goes up to like world scale, they become d8s, and if it goes up to cosmic scale, it becomes d10s.
Wow. All right. So, well, you guys weren't there.
No, obviously. We needed mundane scale d4s.
Well, yeah, the SWAT team did more damage than all of superheroes combined.
So as the Watcher, you don't really want to kill off the heroes in the first scene. So you start to hold back on you adding your Doom dice to your villain rolls, but then that just means your Doom pool is growing. So then that became very hard for the heroes to do anything with the environment.
It also might be built into the balance of the game, because as that goes on, the game gets more difficult. So mechanically, it makes sense to do things as quickly as possible. So maybe it's trying to build tension by hurrying you along. I don't know if that's supposed to be what's going on.
I think that's what they're aiming for. Mm-hmm. And again, reading it, I said, okay, you know, every time you roll a 1, the Watcher's going to add a die to the Doom Pool, and you'll get a plot point. But I think what happened this time is we just rolled a metric ton of 1s. We were rolling pretty crappy. And so Lyle's Doom Pool grew a lot very quickly. And like, people who've read Breakout, this, you know, they know what happens. I'm not going to like spoil the event for anyone who hasn't, but very early in the scenario, both Yudro and I took a D12 worth of emotional stress. And
basically all your hit points.
If we took...
There's three areas. Yeah, we didn't cover this. So there's physical, mental, and emotional stress, and they go up from D4 to D12.
Right.
Just like Dresden.
Yeah, and if you go over D12, then you're going to trauma.
And you're also taken out of the scene. If your stress goes over D12 in any of those three categories, you're out of the scene.
But, you know, sometimes you know, the heroes do wake up tied up, and then that's the next scene, or that's the next issue that you need to deal with. And that's something that I did that wasn't very comic book-esque, and that was kind of just played it out when I should have just like, all right, end the scene. Because they do try to make it very, let's say, narrative, and they really encourage that. And they do say, well, the Watcher can just end the scene.
Yeah, you spend a certain, you know, sorry, yeah. I didn't mean
and I certainly had enough Doom points.
Yeah, exactly. You had enough Doom dice to just end the scene, and like you said, that's kind of a comic book trope.
I think what you said there now, Lyle, was one of the things that I really liked about the game, is in that it was very narrative. Because you would roll for your action, you declare your intent. You don't declare your action. This is what I want to do. And then your opponent rolls theirs, and it's as a reaction. And depending on what you roll and what they roll, that can change what actually happens. So it's kind of like piling a story on top of a story on top of a story. Each event just gets told in a story manner. We had so much time putting together our pools that it wasn't a very smooth story, but...
But, I mean, that could be like a comic book. Sometimes you have a comic book and it's just one long fight.
Yeah.
And that's the whole issue. Sometimes... Yeah.
No, that's when you have a really, 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 really long power-up that takes 5 books and then you have one fight that lasts a page.
Yeah.
Wayne has resentment.
Maybe I thought fights were supposed to be kind of short and lethal and win or lose, the combat's done and you kind of move on to the next part of the story. I want to try the system again, but I kind of had the same problem with the Marvel Heroic role-playing game that I had with Fate, in the idea that they kind of put mechanics into the role-playing aspect of it. Like, maybe it's hard to explain, but I kind of intentionally chose the Invisible Woman because it's a character kind of different than I normally play. Normally, I kind of play the...
We play women a lot.
No, but... She's all right. She's fine. She was a troubled
woman a lot.
Yeah.
Who did it say she's troubled?
Sorry, go on.
Anyway, so I like she's very.
How is this woman different from all the other women you play?
She's very selfless.
Compassionate.
What?
She's very compassionate.
Like looking at her distinctions. All right, could I make my point? Looking at her distinctions and reading her background,
yeah.
I was trying to play someone different from the as Chris would say jerk face characters I normally play. Right.
Alternatively, I go with Mini Bucket.
Okay, or Mini Bucket. Right. So. Yeah, like I saw her background and her distinctions, and I said, okay, I'm going to try and play this character, but I don't know, I'm kind of drawing a blank on how to say it. Like
I don't know, I can think of one point where there's some slight confusion whether or not what action you were trying to do. I thought you were doing an action where you were trying to motivate the team, which included some S.H.I.E.L.D. agents, and you started to give a speech, and I was just confused because I thought you were setting something up for them. You know, when you,
right.
You know, if you imagine like, you're buffing the players, like a bard or a cleric or something, like a bard, you're giving a rousing speech and all the other PCs are, you know, buffed and they'll attack better.
Yeah, I guess.
But you were just, I don't know, just doing a little bit of speech, which was fine. Once I realized that, I said, okay, yeah, go ahead and do what you were going to do. That's fine.
Well,
we don't have to like, slap mechanics onto your little speech.
Yeah, but looking back, I don't know, kind of stepping back and looking at it, maybe I was kind of trying to game the system, because for my previous action, I used the S.H.I.E.L.D. agents. I asked, if I work with the S.H.I.E.L.D. agents, does that count as me being a team, and can I roll my team die, which is very good, right? It's the best one on my sheet. And you said, yes, Lyle, and we kind of acted like a team. And so the next action, I as a player said, I want to roll that D10 again. I want to use my team die because it's the best affiliation die I have. Do those S.H.I.E.L.D. agents still count as my team? If not, if I give some kind of speech
you're on the same team.
Well, I don't know because like...
No offense, man, but I just don't understand the confusion.
They're not superheroes. I am. If I what I ended up doing is I used my force powers essentially just to smack Carnage. Did I coordinate with them? By that description, no. If I had described or if I had narrated a little frame where I gave them a little speech to say, okay, fire on Carnage while I also do this thing as well, then yes, we're coordinating as a team. But in that case, I acted by myself.
Okay, I see.
And I as a player said, I want to roll that D10 because it's the best one. So.
Yeah, I suppose you guys didn't coordinate a whole lot.
At all,
yeah.
For me.
You know something? As the Invisible Woman, you never turned invisible.
I know, because I was too busy failing my rolls and trying to throw up force fields that then got fizzled and didn't go up.
I wonder what you could have done as an Invisible Woman.
I also kind of...
Run away.
Yeah, run away. I could have run away.
Like Kitty Pryde.
Yeah, by the time I kind of could have turned invisible, poor Kitty Pryde was grappling with venom, and that's not a euphemism. But, you know, again, like I turn invisible and what, run away and kind of leave her there? Yeah, I guess that would be...
Would you consistently try to do... Every turn, until
because,
we said, you can't do that.
Again, that was the player me trying to say, okay, what's the opposite of compassion, being a selfish jerk?
Yeah.
Which apparently it's not.
Well,
apparently lack of compassion is not having compassion.
No, the opposite of compassion is not the downside of compassion. Oh. It's the opposite of compassion. The distinctions are, you know, what's the disadvantage to being compassionate? And the disadvantage to being
compassionate is not being
uncompassionate.
Apparently I don't know because I can't do it.
All right.
Glad we settled that. All right.
Yeah, I mean, there's a little bit of that. It's like on my character sheet, one of the things was hot-headed, and whereas for my affiliation was team. My best die for that was to work as a team. But
all the Fantastic Four. Yeah.
I went ahead and tried to just attack the guy who was pissing me off. So it was kind of I was either going to lose one die or have a weaker die because I was going solo.
Right.
So it was a little bit tough to roleplay that and fit the mechanics at the same time, but maybe I just wasn't playing him correctly.
And to be fair, we only played an action scene, right? Because it took so long. We never really got to a quote-unquote role-playing scene.
True.
So,
you did at the beginning. We were talking about
the
raft and what you
were
going to do.
Yeah, we were talking to the shield agent. There was one there, but then...
And Yujiro had a scene when he talked to the sentry, when he went into the room and...
And you tried to use his girl next door and, what, combat expertise to give him a drill sergeant pep talk to get up off his bunk and help?
Under the shy little girl
next door. I'm
going to
use the girl...
You loser!
Yeah, I'm going to use the girl next door and... Come on, get up, Yujiro!
As the watcher, yeah, I don't know. I did set up one scene distinction, and that's when you kind of had this die that, and it was an alarm going off, and the idea is you could choose to roll that to make it more difficult to hear or to coordinate. I could have done more
actually,
with that.
I think that would have changed a lot, because when I flew down to the opposite end of the room, I didn't coordinate with the other guys. I was thinking about saying, you know, having the invisible woman put up a force field so that a path could be open, so we could try and get out, or things like that, but I didn't do that because I didn't think people would be able to hear me over those sirens. I think that made a big difference in the game, but, you know, just to say.
But you didn't take any bonus. You didn't take any benefit for role-playing that. And I think, kind of getting back to what I said before about there being kind of a lot of mechanics in the role-playing aspect of this game, because it was a distinction, right, these sirens going off, if you could find a way to use it in a positive way, you added a D8 to your pool.
Nothing came to me.
But if you could use it in a negative way, you could have earned a plot point and added a D4 to your roll.
And I considered that as well, but there's no rolling involved in yelling to your teammates.
Well, exactly, but...
So how does that work?
I don't know, but I would almost say that if I were the watcher and did something like that that affects everybody and is not, you can't choose to turn off those sirens. They are there. They are in everything. I think I would say in every role you make where noise is going to be a factor, or maybe just even in every role, you have to use this in either the positive or the negative way. I mean, you could even say like, yeah, these sirens are going off and they're loud. They're distracting. You can't think clearly. Add a D4 and here's a plot point. Or, you know what? Your enemy is distracted. They can't hear you coming. Here's that D8, but you won't get a plot point. So, I don't know. It was almost like when we did Fate and Lyle made some cover for himself with a Fate point. Mm-hmm. And then the next round, it was gone because he didn't maintain it. It was almost the opposite of this in that we could choose to have this distinction affect us when we benefited from it. Either via a D8 or via a plot point where, I don't know, I think maybe it should just affect everybody and you have to use it one way in your die pool. Basically because it's just something you can't ignore. It's not selective.
Nothing's coming to me of how I would have used it, but again, maybe that's just this wasn't the best of examples for that kind of thing.
Maybe.
No, I suppose you could have said, I don't hear the villain say, get out of my way, we just want to get out of here, instead of...
Yeah, but then I think Chris's point is then how would that have translated to
then
a
he gets
role?
No, then he gets more plot points. Because of the alarm, I don't hear them, so therefore I fight them.
Would you have given me a plot point for that?
If you had said it.
Oh, okay.
But
the players can choose to say how it's affecting them.
Okay.
In a negative way. I think what happened
is... That's why I didn't yell the one or two ideas I had over to the other players. So maybe my idea was I was going to shoot fire down one of them and then have you open away, but whatever.
Which is what you did, and you pretty much took out Carnage. And then
Carnage took out us.
You guys actually rolled a lot better than I did in the beginning of the game. So Carnage missed you. He's supposed to jump on you. He missed you. Then you, even though you fired at both the elevator door and Carnage, you hit him, and he had that limit, which you activated, which made him vulnerable to flame or vulnerable to fire, and he took the two streams of
he
stress.
Took what, emotional and physical?
Yeah. So he was really down, and then you couldn't even touch him after that.
No, yeah, he was really down, and then he beat the hell out of us somehow.
It was Professor, was it Nefaro or something, or Dr. Nefaro?
Yeah, and the living laser came out.
Yeah, well, the thing with him was...
Why couldn't the brain guy have come out?
He had...
The living laser actually didn't do anything.
Well, no, because he's like, the other guys, they got him. All right, I'm just out of here.
Because when the living laser came out, he shot himself as a laser across the room, and Wayne did a great stunt there where he bent a force field as a prism to scatter his light. I thought that was the best stunt.
And I rolled like 3 ones.
You know, so that's a... But against the doctor, he had 4 die every roll for his association. He did good as a solo. He was overconfident or selfish or something like that. He had a superpower, and he also had a specialty. I was going solo, so that was my weakest die. And then I only had 2 other die to go for it. So
that's why I kind of kept yelling at you, do a stunt, yeah. Do something to add a fourth.
I was out of power points. And my hot-headed wasn't helping there.
As a hot-headed hero, oh, I see that Sue's in danger and Kitty Pryde's in danger. I'm a hothead. I'm just going to charge in there and attack Carnage. Like, you could have actually used that either way.
Absolutely. And I think in retrospect, instead of using the hot-headed as the larger die, because it was actually weakening my die pool, it was a negative thing at that point. So I should have been using it as the weaker die and been getting plot points.
What were his other distinctions, though?
There was Never Grows Up, and I think it was something so like a flirt, yeah.
His big...
And none of those seemed really...
Your big sister is in danger. So you can go
on your cry? Sister?
What?
He's thinking Never Grow Up.
Never grow up like your big sister.
Your sister. Or Kitty Pryde. Maybe it was like, oh, you know, if I rescue her, then... And you're wrinkling your forehead there.
I didn't see you come up with a suggestion, Jim.
That's what I like about the system. And I think... Could I have been a better watcher? Of course.
Could we have been better players?
Of course.
Hell yes. I think
about halfway through, I should have stepped... it was one of those things where, you know, kind of like the... Yeah, it's kind of, we had the point of no return, and we just thought, well, it's going to end soon, one way or the other, and it just didn't. But we should have said, okay, let's think of the story.
Can I be like the anti-invisible woman? Murderous.
Well, you were. You were the visible woman.
Oh, yeah, all right.
You didn't turn invisible, and you were not
I didn't
back.
Turn invisible once. Yeah, did I? Yeah.
You know how you wanted to play Emma Frost? You did.
I should have. Halfway through the game, I just should have ripped up that character sheet and said, screw it, I'm Emma Frost.
Where's the Hulk?
Yeah.
Sorry, the Hulk's not in the basic game. I just don't want somebody to get to go. Where is the Hulk?
Yeah, he's not here, yeah.
Yeah, since we're talking about it, what do you get in the book? You get the basic rules. You get a starter adventure, which I guess was...
I think it's 2 chapters.
Yeah, it's 2 chapters.
Not just one fight.
Not just one scene as we got through. Yeah.
One hallway. Here's
that's
the
what
map.
It felt like.
It looks like just 2 parallel lines. Yeah.
What is this?
Yeah, that's all this is. And then you get kind of a rogues gallery. And that's connected to the event. And then you get some data files, which are the heroes that are available to you. And that included a lot of the X-Men, the Fantastic Four, a lot of the Avengers, but more of the new Avengers.
Mm-hmm. A couple unaffiliated people.
Iron Fist is affiliated with Luke Cage as Power Man and Iron Fist. And
it was
Luke,
Daredevil.
And Daredevil, who's part of the breakout story.
A large collection of heroes to choose.
So when they release other events, they'll release other data files.
I'm sure they'll probably...
And there's two. There's one coming out in April, and there's another one coming out in May.
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I'd be interested in seeing what and who is in them. And I imagine later on down the line, they will probably put out a Marvel data file book. Which has, you know, all the data files of the
They'll
heroes collected.
Separate them out of the X-Men book and the Avenger book or something.
Maybe. I did like the data files because Lyle was kind enough to lend me 3 volumes of the Ultimate Fantastic Four before the game so I could get like a feel for the characters, which didn't come through because I was too busy getting my rear end handed to me. But the data files were 2 pages for each hero. And the second page, I think, is a really nice kind of background description, personality description, kind of connection to other team. Yeah, I think it's a really nice bio. And as someone who is not really a giant comic book fan, I could flip through those and I said, okay, that's what this character is about. That's their background motivation. This is how they relate to other people. And generally, as someone who doesn't like playing established characters, I still thought it was pretty good. I said, okay, this bio is solid enough for all of the characters where I feel like I can play this character. Not very well, as it turns out, but I can still play this character.
All right, so in conclusion, 2 things. Does the game capture a comic book story? And 2, did you like the game? Chris?
Okay, not being a really big comic... Sorry, I'm not going to be able to give you a simple answer on either of those. Not being a really big comic book fan, or not being well-read in comics, I don't know how well it captured a comic book story, but character, the people, including the NPCs and the PCs, they felt very comic booky. Also, the way that you had a lot of freedom to interpret and use your powers was really reminiscent of a comic book feel, in that a lot of times some enemy will have an immunity to one of the superhero's powers, but he'll think of a new ingenious way to use it that really allows him. And that plus the teamwork, it really has a good comic feel. So yeah, I think overall from what I know, I would say yes. Did I like the game? Looking at the book, I was really excited, and everything that has to go with, that is similar to the Fate system looks really cool to me. So I really loved the ideas in there. Actually playing, I was a little bit eh, but I really want to give it another shot. I don't think that I played to the hilt.
I'm not a comic book guy, so I can't and won't comment on that part because I have no idea what to say, really. But
choosing to be Kitty Pryde to be part of the Fantastic Four, kind of.
Well, to be fair to you, Joy, he didn't know we were going as Fantastic Four.
Didn't I say Fantastic Four?
I was trying to give him an out. All right.
But what about the game?
The game. Yeah, I can't give a simple answer, but this time I actually will give an answer, I guess. I'm not a big fan of narrative games or dice pools, so there it's kind of and I thought the Doom pool mechanic would be really interesting, but I think, the longer an encounter lasts, the more unbalanced it is, so I think there might be some potential balance issues there. But then again, we only had one session and one combat, and we weren't familiar with the rules, so it's difficult to say whether it's a problem with the system or a problem with the way we played, so...
That's true.
Would you want to give it another shot?
Actually, yeah, I would.
As Kitty Pryde? No.
probably not, because I actually couldn't use her powers the way I thought they would.
You kept trying to turn them on and off like a light switch. Well, okay, that's intangible kind of to flip through them, and then tangible again to punch them in the face. It's like,
well, that's the kind of the way I saw her, as in that
that's
kind of...
That's fine. You wanted to play her as the tangible woman.
Well, I played as the visible woman, so...
Or to, use her reactive... What was it? Reactive invisibility, something like that, to grant another character phasing. I thought I could use that as an interrupt. Like a character is being attacked. I use that as an interrupt, but turns out the system doesn't allow that.
So you could have used intangibility defensively as what they call a reaction.
To another player?
I think there is a way you can do it to grant it to another player.
The way it reads is that you can use it as a defensive and you can grant it to another character. However, it doesn't make them intangible. It doesn't make them invincible to the hit. It gives them an extra die to their pool.
Narratively, yeah. It does kind of make them intangible because it says reactive power, you spend a plot point to add a phasing power to another character's die pool before they roll. So because it's part of phasing and because she has that intangibility power, that's probably the die you would add. So you are narratively making them intangible for a short amount of time.
Assuming they roll well.
Doesn't mean that you're invulnerable to all damage. Right. The two phasing powers that she has are airwalking and intangibility. So let's say if you made somebody intangible and they're hit by an energy blast, you can conceivably say the energy blast is so powerful, it doesn't matter that
it's a punch.
Well, if it's a punch, then unfortunately either Kitty Pryde was too slow or the intangibility wore off just at the wrong time. As you said in the beginning, Chris, you kind of narrate the action, not the outcome. If the person rolled well enough and they missed, well then they went right through them. So I do kind of see what you mean. It's not a guaranteed buff. The Invisible Woman had the same thing with her force fields, right?
Yeah.
Other people could use her force blast power in their reaction roll if I had put up a force field around us.
Yeah.
Again, it doesn't guarantee. In that one, perhaps my concentration isn't strong enough and the punch goes through the force field. I do kind of see what you're saying, though. I guess so for mine, did this kind of feel like a comic book story? Yes, with the caveat that we were kind of playing slow because we didn't know the system as well. In the beginning, I really liked how Lai was going panel, panel, panel to kind of...
And when Yujiro was going, I don't know, it's going panel, panel, panel.
Well, that was funny. But the action would lend itself very well to a comic book simply because of that framing mechanic they have in there. Anyway, but you do kind of have to really know the system well. Just go boom, action, boom, action.
Yeah.
So the answer to that question, yes. Would I play it again? Yes, with having read the rule book from cover to cover maybe a few more times.
Yeah.
as we said, the first time you read it, it seems very simple and straightforward and, oh, this is what you do. Playing the games, there's a lot of, wait a minute, what happened now? And this effect triggers, and how do we do this? Because this character is a Watcher character and not a PC, so...
You know, I'd really like to try, now that we've gone through this one, even though it was just a combat, actually, I want to try another combat. I'd like to see a team of superheroes like the Avengers versus a powerful supervillain and just not... a whole scenario. I just would like to go through another combat just to see, now that I understand the rules a little bit more, how that would go.
For me, I did it capture comic books. Like, reading it, definitely. It certainly helped that they had actual art from the comic books. Mm-hmm. And the use of examples is great in any rule book, but here it's also good because of the referencing characters that you know. Made me really excited. It made me dig out some old Marvel trade paperbacks that I had and read those, such as Breakout and Ultimate Fantastic Four, number one.
Which are actually really good.
Since I knew you guys were going to play those, well, I thought you guys were going to play the Fantastic Four.
Fantastic Three.
Fantastic Two and Kitty Pryde. I definitely want to play it again. And the reason is I'm not sure if you would read it, if you read the book cover to cover a few more times, it would have helped with any of those situations. Because certainly they had examples explaining things, but there was a lot of the things I'd be like, yeah, but how does that really work?
Uh-huh.
I really wanted to see it in action. So I actually wouldn't, I might review a couple things in the rule book before playing again, but I just wanted like play again from the start. And, you know, by the time we got better with the rules, I think we're kind of like stuck in the mud.
Out of curiosity, would you want to play or would you want to be the Watcher again?
I could do both. Like, I am actually the comic book fan of the four of us, and I think one disadvantage that you guys had as players is that you don't read comic books, so you don't see all the different things that you could do with the powers. Yeah, why didn't you turn invisible, Wayne? Intangibility, there's so many things. Like, at one point, I just said, why don't you just go intangible and go into the floor? Because that happens so many times in the X-Men comics. Kitty Pryde would go intangible. She grabs somebody, hold her breath. I'm not sure if she still has that limitation, but it certainly was when I used to read the X-Men. Hold her breath, pull the both of them down under. I remember when she did that with Colossus once and pulls them down, and maybe they pop up later down the hallway, and then suddenly the team is reunited because you've got intangible Kitty Pryde popping up and the invisible woman making herself visible. And now Count Nefaria is like, what? And Carnage is just, you know, eating the shield agent.
She does it with enemies all the time too. She'd grab them, go halfway down, and then
I actually never, I guess that's the problem because with me, because I'm not, well, like I said, I'm not big on like narrative games. I saw my powers as being limited by what was listed there, so I kind of didn't think outside the box.
Oh, you're thinking like D&D powers.
Yeah, so it's like, huh.
But like some of the really clever stuff like that Wayne and Chris came up with was to make some sort of like a quasi-prism using the Invisible Woman's powers, and whether or not that, you know, to kind of mess up the living laser, and whether or not she could actually do that. It was cool that you guys tried, and it's actually like, you know, when a new comic book writer takes over a comic book and they're like, you know something? The Invisible Woman just walking around invisible is boring. She's going to have invisible force fields. And then the next guy is like, we've done that. Now she gets little... invisible air shoes, and she can do all these cool things, and they keep adding to the powers, and then she becomes the most powerful member of the Fantastic Four.
That is one of the benefits of an open system like this. You can just kind of come up with sort of cool stunts, and you are rewarded mechanically a little bit. But would we have done better if we were more familiar with comic books? Possibly. Maybe I still have to get past that sort of gamey feeling of rationalizing a player choice in such a way that it fits the fiction of the story. Like that prism thing, well, clever, and Chris really helped me with that to kind of figure out how I could do it. That was me looking at my sheet and saying, I need more dice. I'm a science expert. How can I add this D10 to my pool just to kind of make my role better? And then Chris came up with that great idea. So it kind of worked in the fiction. But I kind of did something narratively that was motivated by mechanics, and those two are very connected, and maybe it's just something I have to get over and say, no, this is how the system works. You're not cheating, you're not gaming the system, you're not breaking it. This is just what you're supposed to do, and you narrate your choices, and then you roll your dice, and that's what happens.
I see that as kind of forcing you to do something that probably a lot of comic book writers are forced to do. Is I'm really tired of, you know, writing the 500th issue of Spider-Man. What other thing can I do with him? Yeah. So then they go, hold on, maybe I could do this. And it kind of, you know, forces you as a player to do something more creative than you would have thought otherwise.
And I would really recommend anybody who's playing this for the first time to use characters that have a higher die in team, because that gives incentive for the players to work as a team. And that's just more that you can do. like I said before, with me trying to ram the bad guy into an invisible wall that the Invisible Woman put up.
I guess that leads into whether or not this is a good game for a new player, because we did mention that before. I guess for a comic book fan, not as the watcher, but, you know, they could just say, and somebody's helping them create their dice pool, if they go, okay, I want to do this, you know, because they read it in a comic book, and you're like, okay, cool, and an experienced watcher is like, okay, you need to do this.
Yeah, in some ways, this might be a better opening game than something like D&D. 4E, it's easy because, you know, you have your cards that out in front of you, say, I use this power, and that's done. But this one, the rules really are there to suit whatever you want to do. All you have to do is say, I want to do this. And as long as there's somebody who knows the game, they can say, all right, well, we add this, and that's how you do it. Roll your dice.
If the person wasn't a comic book fan, wasn't familiar with the characters that they're playing, then, yeah, it could get more difficult because they're like, it's just one more thing they have to learn.
I suppose, but I mean, if assuming that they don't have a difficult player, I mean, Superman, he's strong and he flies.
Yeah, know? But I guess what...
And
but,
not in Marvel.
And not Marvel.
And yeah, not Marvel. Okay, if you have Sentry...
Well, I was so going to burn me on this, I was thinking when I was
saying it. You have... Oh, not only did I bring up Superman again, wrong universe. All right, jeez. All right, so let's swap it to the Sentry. I guess I kind of see what you're saying, and I think I would agree more with Lyle. Someone who is familiar with comic books and knows what the characters can do, or at least could kind of imagine what they could do, and had an experienced watcher, another experienced player there, this could be a good introductory game. For a person who's not familiar with comic books, I'm going to say probably not, because you look at a thing like D&D, and it's your two-hit roll, and then it's your damage roll, which translates very easily into, I hit him with my sword, okay, roll this, now do this much damage.
Yeah, but...
You look at a hero's data file, and... Yeah, okay, some of them are a bit more self-explanatory, right? Like, Human Torch had Flame Blast, right? Or Sentry had Super Strength, or Super Durability. But that doesn't tell you as a player, and especially one who's inexperienced with a role-playing game, what action you can take. Mm-hmm. It's just, I have Super Strength. What do I do with that? I don't know. I just want to hit a guy, right?
Well, use super strength.
Well, okay, fine. That's a bad example. But am I at least kind of making sense?
It gets into the question of whether or not a really open system is better for a new player.
I think my vote is still for a structured system to introduce new players.
But as long as they're interested, it's not a hard system to pick up. You do that for one or two sessions, and the person can probably handle it on their own from there.
Yeah. Again, you say that, and yeah, it's not a hard system to pick up. You're reading through the book, you're like, oh, this is dead easy, and then... Playing the game, you're like, oh, what? Well, oh, I wasn't kind of expecting that situation to come up, or I don't really know what to do now. Or
what, supervillains attacking you? Oh, whoa.
Wait, hold on here. What kind of game is this?
Yeah, what's with the animosity?
I didn't mean that. You mean
just that? You were trying to escape from a prison?
And we were dumb enough to try and stop you? Why was that?
Tentacles.
Yeah. Yeah, tentacles coming out of the darkness? Whoa, when are we getting to like superhero Cthulhu? But
all right.
Well, thank you for joining us again on Idle Red Hands. Check us out online, www.idleredhands.com, idleredhands.com. You can listen to us right there on the website through Stitcher, through DriveThruRPG, or iTunes. Post on our website, comments there, in our forums, through Facebook, or just send us an email, and we'd love to hear from you. Oh, also, don't forget to follow us on Twitter.
Yep.
And we'll see you next time.
Bye.
Bye.
Flame on.
Bye.
What do you mean, flame off?
Flame off.
DriveThruRPG. We average 9 new titles a day. That's over 60 a week. And we've got well over 15,000 RPG titles online right now. DriveThruRPG. The one true source for RPGs. We'll be right back.
Idle Red Hands is recorded in Kobe, Japan. See us online at www.idleredhands.com. Music provided by Tripod Jimmy, and the song was Roadkill. Hope you enjoyed it. See you next time.